Mr. Hayes.
May it please the court, my name is Tom Hayes. I represent Mr. Morales. Mr. Morales was convicted of distribution of 230 grams of heroin, and he was sentenced to 57 months following a calculation of the federal sentencing guidelines. And the defense concedes that the guidelines were properly calculated. There, in view of that, in view of the recent decisions from this circuit, I understand that the sentence is presumed to be reasonable. However, there are factors that I think rebuts that presumption of reasonableness, and that should promote a remand to the district court for resentencing. The sentencing transcript reveals that the district court judge was mired in the old federal sentencing guidelines, the pre-Booker Blakely terminology, when discussing Mr. Morales's criminal history. And at one point in the sentencing, Judge Clemente said that Mr. Morales was not eligible for a downward departure.
What's the difference in the legal standard that Judge Clevert might have been thinking of when he was speaking in, as it were, old speak, and the way he would now consider whether he wanted to go below the properly calculated guidelines range? Is there a real difference here by the time he says he thinks the criminal history is about right and he doesn't see any big problems?
Well, I think there's a very real difference because I think that when perceiving factors that comprise an individual's criminal history through the context of the federal sentencing guidelines or the context provided by 3553 sub A, that the reasonable standard transcends the black and white application notes in the federal sentencing guidelines, which ultimately the judge relied upon in determining that the two offenses that comprised Mr. Morales' criminal history that were properly considered to be acceptable offenses for the purpose of assigning criminal history points, and thereby assigning them four criminal history points and ranking them in the category number three.
Well, but of course, as things have evolved, and I certainly wouldn't criticize Judge Clevert at all for struggling through a few weeks after Booker came down, but as things have evolved, you still have to calculate the guidelines range properly, whether it's offense level or criminal history. But it's after you've got that the overall reasonableness can then be taken into account. And I'm not sure whether you're saying that in the old days there was a very high threshold under Coon and under the guidelines themselves that had to be met before a district judge properly could depart, and now it's not so rigid, now it's a much more, there's much more flexibility, or whether, as the government argues, I think a bit in the teeth of some of our recent cases, that downward departures are still completely off limits for the courts of appeals. I'm not clear how you're arguing this, but I don't see how his computation of criminal history is affected by the post-Booker world.
But because once again, the circumstances that comprise, or the actual offenses that comprise the criminal history, it's the defense contention that if those offenses are viewed in the context of 3553A and the reasonableness standard, that it's more likely, and also that the judge did not feel that he was bound by the sentencing guidelines and the stricture on downward departure.
Didn't he indicate that pretty clearly, he was not bound?
Well, he indicated that he was not bound, but at another point of page 22 of the sentencing transcript, I believe it was line 9, after all of the analysis had been completed, he specifically said, therefore, I find this analysis is not eligible for a downward departure. And as we know now, it seems to be now, I should point out that I too was having trouble a couple of weeks after Booker, struggling with the federal sentencing guidelines and how it would be applied in sentencing. But as we sit here now, we know probably in recent cases from this Circuit that downward departures are absolute, and that at this point, I think it's fairly easy to say that the record is not revealed without clear finding that Judge Pavilion or some system of Alice in the same manner hadn't realized that he did not have to expressly notify a downward departure and could have viewed those two offenses within the context of 3553A.
Well, exactly, as a whole, really. I mean, are you asking for a Palladino remand? What are you asking for?
I'm asking for a remand for resentencing purposes.
But not, I mean, because we don't know. I mean, I don't see how you'd be entitled to anything more than just a request to the district judge to indicate whether a fuller understanding of how the guidelines work would have influenced his decision.
I think that that would be appropriate also. I think in view of the proximity to Booker and the judge's comments and how they were somewhat contradictory rather than somewhat contradictory going back and forth between the reasonableness of 3553A and the federal sentencing guidelines, I think it may be important to me and to the district court to find out if in fact after he now knows that the downward departures are absolute and all of the progression of the law since Mr. Morales was in fact sentenced, whether or not he would have sentenced Mr. Morales differently. And I suspect that based upon my review of the factors that I feel rebut the presumption of reasonableness, that Judge Clavert, who is an excellent judge, would agree that he would like the opportunity to resentence Mr. Morales.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hayes. Mr. Phillips?
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Nelson Phillips, an Assistant U.S. Attorney from the Eastern District of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. I first wanted to address the Court's first inquiry of the parties, that is whether or not the Supreme Court's decision in Booker affected this Court's decision in Franz. And as we know at this point in time, from specifically United States versus Vaughn from January 6th of this year, the Court specifically indicated that yes, it does have the jurisdiction to review a district court's decision to refuse to depart from the guidelines. As Mr. Hayes just put it, and the Court has put it very succinctly in some recent cases, departures as it were pre-Booker are obsolete. So I'll concede that point within my brief that that has been answered by this Court. The second question that the Court had posed to the parties in its initial order with regard to briefing is that whether or not the district court misunderstood or misapplied the guidelines post-Booker, and I think that the answer to that question is no. As the Court has put it in its questioning of Mr. Hayes, this did take place some weeks after Booker. However, I think the district court did a wonderful job with the limited amount of experience we had post-Booker in considering that he indicated the guidelines were advisory and specifically noted that the guidelines were no longer mandatory but advisory unless the 3553 considerations, as he put them, indicate that there should be some other disposition.
Mr. Phillips, here's my concern about this time period. He does say that, but then he also uses the language of downward departures. As I'm sure you well recall, one couldn't make a downward departure until you had made a decision that a particular case was outside the heartland, that there were factors that the Sentencing Commission had not taken into account. There had to be, to put it just generally, a strong reason to deviate from the sentence that the guidelines prescribed. And the standard of reasonableness is definitely a fuzzier one. That, I mean, you don't have that sense of extraordinary need. A district court judge, at least according to the way this circuit's been trying to interpret it, we'll see if we're right or not, has to look at these 3553A factors. If it finds on the basis of the facts and gives the appropriate justifications that we've talked about in Dean, then you can pick a sentence, if you will, below a guideline range or above a guideline range. The government's free to ask and say this range isn't enough. And it's that difference in standard that concerns me here. Would the judge have felt more free to go lower had he had the benefit of what's now been a little bit more than a year of experience?
If I understand the court's question correctly, I think that the judge would not have done anything differently in the sense that...
How can you be sure? I mean, I guess that's what I'm most worried about.
There was no discussion with regard to the guideline range having been improperly calculated.
Right, and I don't see anything in this record that makes me think the guideline range was wrong. My concern is the freedom with which the judge thought he could go above or below the range.
Sure. What I take from the sentencing hearing is that when the guideline range was calculated, when all the parties essentially agreed that the York, Pennsylvania convictions essentially were scored appropriately,
right,
and separately, that the judge essentially adopted the PSR at that point in time, decided what the range was going to be, and after argument from the parties, I should say proceeding to the adoption and argument from the parties based upon those sentencing guidelines, section 41.2, the court essentially stated that I'm not persuaded at this point in time that a downward departure is necessary. And of course, downward departure, the terminology is old school, of course, but at that point I think it can be implied or inferred that the district court didn't have a problem with the criminal history, or at least the calculation of that criminal history, or the guideline range for that matter, to indicate that at some point in time or something else was out there in order to allow him to do something else. I think he was fully aware of that when he finally imposed sentence, in stating that, look, these are advisory, I can do something else if the 3553A factors tell me I should do something else. So I think he felt free to do something else if necessary. But then he goes on and states very clearly, as far as the 3553A factors are concerned, that he took into account social history, the defendant's need for drug treatment, the nature of the offense, its impact on the community. And he specifically states all of the other factors mentioned in the statute, noting also the defendant's age and family circumstances. So he ties very sufficiently the 3553A factors to the sentence he imposed, which, of course, was a guideline sentence, which enjoys a rebuttable presumption measured against those 3553A factors. So I hope I answered your question. I think that the judge felt free after the sentence, or at least the holding in Booker, to move either up or down if he felt the need to. I think that's the only issue that we have here at this point in time.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you.
Mr. Hayes, how much time does he have?
It's my recollection of the sentencing transcript was that perhaps Judge Clavert did consider 3553A considering the factors that Attorney Phillips has enumerated this morning, but I think that he was very confined to the federal sentencing guidelines analysis of the criminal history. And as a consequence of his calculations that were derived directly from the application notes of the federal sentencing guidelines and from the federal sentencing guidelines, he determined this young man to be a criminal history 3 when, without the application note that was relied upon, he would have been a criminal history 2. And it's my position on behalf of Mr. Morales that these two offenses that comprise the criminal history and that were committed after the federal offense that we stand in front of you today on, those are the only items that comprises criminal history, and that they effectively took him from a criminal history 1 to a criminal history 3. And so maybe just for her to in fact analyze the certain factors concerning the base offense level relative to 3553A, but if you review the criminal sentencing transcript, it's very clear that when he calculated criminal history, he was confined to the federal sentencing guidelines application. I don't think that resulted in a reasonable sentence for Mr. Morales. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hayes. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes,
Your Honor. The court thanks you for your efforts on behalf of your firm. Thank Mr. Phillips, too. And the court will be in recess until 9:30, 10 o'clock tomorrow, I guess.
Thank you.